and certification requirements of the Corporation for Public Broadcasting. Information about KBOO Community Radio's open meeting policy is available by calling the station at 503-231-8032. Meetings will be conducted at 20 Southeast 8th Avenue, Portland, Oregon, unless otherwise noted. The Program Advisory Committee meets the second Tuesday of each month at 6 p.m. Please call 503-231-8032 to verify if a meeting is being held.
Tune in to KBOO on Friday, March 8th for all-day special programming celebrating International Women's Day. For 24 hours starting at 5:30 a.m., the women-identified folk of KBOO will create special programming celebrating the accomplishments and struggles of women. Again, that's International Women's Day, Friday, March 8th, here at your community radio station, KBOO Portland.
Like she said, this is KBOO Portland. KBOO programming is made possible by KBOO member listeners and support from One With Heart Martial Arts, offering a transgender self-defense workshop this Saturday, March 9th, from 2 p.m. to 5 p.m., located at 4231 Southeast Hawthorne Boulevard. Pre-registration is required and is open to all transgender individuals age 13 and up. More information online at onewithheart.com. Now it's 5:01, time for the KBOO Evening News.
And now, your daily volunteer-produced community newscast, the KBOO Evening News.
Coming up on the KBOO Evening News, the state of Washington has recalled over 30,000 pounds of ground beef.
Several pro-impeachment protesters were arrested at House Speaker Nancy Pelosi's office.
And an interview with Caitlin Day of the Portland State University Student Union.
Good evening. This is the KBOO Evening News for Wednesday, March 6th, 2019. I'm Emily Gresham Beamer.
And I'm Erin J. Bernard. A beef plant in the state of Washington, the Washington Beef, has issued a recall of more than 30,000 pounds of ground beef. The recall was spurred after factory workers, then subsequently a customer, reportedly discovered pieces of plastic in the beef. On January 27th, workers discovered pieces of plastic within ground beef produced at the company's factory in Yakima County. The products affected appear to have been produced on December 27th of last year, and affected products can be identified by a use or freeze by date of January 20th, 2019. The beef products are said to have been sold to 27 customers in 13 states, including Washington and Oregon. There is concern that more affected customers will likely be discovered. The U.S. Department of Agriculture's Food Safety and Inspection Service has said it is concerned that contaminated beef products are in consumers' refrigerators around the country, considering the nationwide reach of the company. For a full list of the Washington beef products affected, visit the Food Safety Inspection Service website at fsis.usda.gov.
Several pro-impeachment protesters were arrested while staging a sit-in at the office of House Speaker Nancy Pelosi. Protesters were joined by Representative Rashida Tlaib, who last month, along with Representative Ilhan Omar, signed a pledge calling on lawmakers to, quote, defend us from a president who believes he can get away with anything. In an op-ed published in the Detroit Free Press earlier this year, Tlaib wrote, on an almost daily basis, the president attacks our Constitution, our democracy, the rule of law, and the American people. Early this year, Pelosi announced that impeachment would not be considered. Yesterday's poll from the Quinnipiac University showed that more than one-third of Americans believe Trump should be impeached.
Yesterday, KBOO News' Emily Gresham Beamer spoke with Caitlin Day of the Portland State University Student Union about tomorrow's planned action. Here's Emily with the interview.
Good evening. You are listening to News from the Boo. I am your host, Mike Crenshaw. And once again, bringing you news from in and around the KBOO community.
Emily Gresham Beamer with KBU News. I'm speaking today with Caitlin Day of the Portland State University Student Union about a recent report regarding police on the PSU campus. Welcome to KBU, Caitlin.
Hello, thank you for having me.
Could you tell KBU listeners a little bit about your organization and the work that you do?
Yeah, so the PSU Student Union, or our acronym is SUSU, the P silent. We are an autonomous student union at Portland State, which means that we are a student group who operates outside of the university system, which this is intentional because we feel that student issues are often shut down and students are not able to take action when we're technically working for the university. And so we try to do radical action outside of the university to fight for the rights of students.
How has the Portland State University's campus public safety office failed to create a safe environment for students, and especially students of color, in your opinion?
The main issue was that PSU went forward with the decision to arm campus security despite both students, faculty, staff, and community members strongly against it. And so that's one of the main ways that it creates an unsafe environment, is because many people feel policing is inherently violent, especially against marginalized people, including Black and brown people. And particularly on Portland State's campus, police are very violent towards houseless people and spend a lot of time controlling who's allowed in public space. And that often means sweeping people off of campus for using facilities to sleep or take care of hygiene.
Have there been any recent incidents that you've observed or have been brought to your attention in particular that highlight this?
One thing in particular that we always direct people to is our school newspaper, the PSU Vanguard. They publish this thing called the Crime Blotter. And if you look through it, oftentimes, basically what they're showing is all the calls that our campus public safety officers have answered. And usually it's for things like there was an unwanted person in a building, and that could be they were using the bathroom to wash their hair, or they were sleeping on a couch. CPSO went and talked to them and found out they weren't a student. And so we see that quite often through the Crime Blotter. I think the most significant incident that we've seen recently was in November when Richard Berry was on our campus. He was a houseless individual and had an altercation with our campus public safety officers. And in that time, from him meeting with CPSO and him going to the hospital, he died. And those are very concerning circumstances for us.
Has there been transparency with these sorts of situations, or is it really, is it hard to find out the facts and the actual situation that transpired?
It's definitely difficult to find out all the facts, especially because what happened with the case with Richard Berry is the official cause of death was a drug overdose. And so the PSU officers were found to have done no wrongdoing. And because of that, they refused to release any of the details of what happened during the altercation that they spoke of.
Mm-hmm. Switching gears a little bit, can you explore the conclusions relating to policing on the PSU campus that the third-party consulting firm Margolis Healy, am I pronouncing that right?
Yes, that is correct.
That they brought to the Board of Trustees, and in addition, the problems that you found with recommendations and the report's source itself.
Totally. So the PSU Student Union, we found a lot of problems with the report. We also spoke to a few faculty members who have expressed similar concerns with the report. I mean, the big talking point that's been in a lot of headlines lately is that they found that 52% of survey respondents, which they were surveying both students, faculty, and community members, they supported the position to disarm campus security, whereas only 37% wanted to keep armed security, and they went ahead and recommended PSU to keep armed campus security. So that was definitely a big issue, but as we looked at it closer, a lot of their arguments they were making we just didn't agree with. Some of them just said, well, they need more training, and so we've made the point that law enforcement training and the inherent function of policing is always going to be violent. And so it's just not a good recommendation to make. And we've also pointed out that Margolis Healy is a consultancy firm that is made up of former law enforcement, especially law enforcement on university campuses. So we knew that all the alternatives they were going to provide for us were going to be law enforcement alternatives, whereas we're asking the Board of Trustees and Portland State University to look at alternatives that do not involve police at all and do not strengthen the prison industrial complex. Because there was also additional recommendations they made about the physical security of PSU, and those recommendations were things such as increasing security cameras or making more of our buildings card access only, so only people who had a PSU ID could get into a building. And we feel that those recommendations are really just increasing surveillance and also giving more power to the university to control who is on public space, and that often means excluding houseless people from campus.
One of the conclusions that the consulting firm came to was that campus police needs to create almost like a surface level engagement that was less militarized. Do you find this to be an even more perhaps insidious way that they could operate on campus, kind of masking their actions more than they were even before?
It definitely can be, and it's also a way for the university to say, like, look, we've listened to you, and we've kind of caved to your demands, but we also are realizing that, no, they're not actually listening to the root of what we're saying, and that policing, no matter how it looks, whether there be more unarmed officers instead of more armed officers, that's still going to be a problem, and that the inherent function of policing is violent and it's used as a means to control public space. And that's not something we want to see on PSU, because PSU claims to be such an innovative campus and has a lot of diverse thinkers, but not everyone is welcome on campus, and that kind of defeats the mission of the university.
Portland State University is holding a Board of Trustees meeting on Thursday from 9 to 12. How will SUSU engage with this meeting?
Yeah, so SUSU will have a pretty big presence there. We're going to do general things that we do at Board of Trustees meeting. We'll have some kind of signs in solidarity with the Washington family and for Disarm PSU. And we've been prepping testimony for the open comment period, which is going to be the second half of it. We've also prepped a counterproposal to the Margolis Healy report that is basically based off of one of the alternatives that was provided by Margolis Healy, which would be essentially reverting back to how campus public safety offices were functioning before PSU made the decision to create a fully deputized police force. But in addition to that, part of our recommendations are going to be increasing investment in non-police alternatives, because there are definitely programs that already exist at PSU. For instance, there's Illuminate, which is a sexual violence prevention organization, and they do a lot of bystander intervention trainings. We also have worked in the past couple months with Students United for Nonviolence, who have been trying to create series of de-escalation workshops for students to have that kind of knowledge. And we'd also just like to see the university get more creative and more innovative with creating transformative justice models and crisis response that doesn't involve police. And so we're also encouraging the university to look at models such as COOTS, which is a non-police first response team in Eugene. And we're also telling them to look towards things that the city might be doing, because they have been looking towards CAHOOTS, and especially because the city's also receiving the same pressure to reduce reliance on policing, and we want to see that happen all across Portland.
Do you have any calls to action for KBOO listeners?
The main call to action right now is if anyone can show up to the Board of Trustees meeting on Thursday, March 7th from 9 a.m. to 12 p.m. There will be a presentation from Margolis Healy. It'll be in the Smith Memorial Student Union building in the ballroom. Public comment is open to anyone in the community, but also just having people show up, hold signs, and stand in solidarity will be amazing. And also just to really make sure that this doesn't get brushed under the rug, because the murder of Jason Washington was something that happened over the summer, and we felt like during the summer the university was doing a lot to kind of make sure people forgot about that, and we want to make sure that people remember and that there are meaningful responses to what happened and meaningful justice for the campus community and also Jason Washington's family.
Do you have any critiques that you'd like to share of current Board of Trustees actions and their relationship with students on the PSU campus?
We take issue with how the Board of Trustees even operates right now. In an ideal world, we wouldn't have a Board of Trustees. That's a very long-term goal for us, is to really push to get rid of the Board of Trustees model. And we feel it's a problem because it's mostly just people who are business owners and CEOs and have a lot of financial interest in PSU. And so when they're making big decisions for PSU, including the decision to arm campus security, it's usually motivated by business interest, and especially motivated by the interest of business districts in the area. So that's something we take a lot of issue with the Board of Trustees.
That was Caitlin Day of the Portland State University Student Union. For KBOO News, I'm Emily Gresham Beamer. You're listening to the KBOO Evening News. Stay tuned after this newscast for News from the Boo. Then at 6, it's Keeping Democracy Alive with Bert Cohen. And at 7, Rising Up with Sonali. Tonight's weather will be rain turning into snow overnight with a low of 34 degrees. Tomorrow will be cloudy with mixed rain and snow showers and a high of 45 degrees. Today in history, in 1857, the U.S. Supreme Court hands down its landmark decision on Sanford versus Dred Scott that people of African descent could not be U.S. citizens and the government had no power to regulate slavery in federal territories. The decision spurred dissent from abolitionists and was an indirect catalyst for the Civil War. Legal scholar Bernard Schwartz said the decision, quote, stands first in any list of the worst Supreme Court decisions. And in 1928, Nobel Prize winner author Gabriel Garcia Marquez is born in Arcata, Colombia. His most well-known works include 100 Years of Solitude, The Autumn of the Patriarch, and Love in the Time of Cholera. The quote of the day is from Gabriel Garcia Marquez, who wrote, quote, it is not true that people stop pursuing dreams because they grow old. They grow old because they stop pursuing dreams.
Two days after President Trump walked out on his summit with Kim Jong-un, North Koreans have already started rebuilding the Sohae satellite launching station, according to U.S. satellite imagery. Following Trump's initial summit with Kim in Singapore last June, North Korea began to dismantle the site, but then stopped doing so around the end of August. This rebuilding could indicate North Korean plans to resume intercontinental missile testing, as the same missiles that launch satellites into orbit could also carry bombs. Trump has previously touted North Korea's cessation of ICBM testing as an example of his diplomatic success and skillful deal-making.
Up next, KBOO News poet Dan Raphael has an important political announcement.
JFK announced he was running for president 8 months before the election. It's a year farther than that, and the media keeps buzzing us with who's running and who's not, as if we were getting immune to Trump's distractions and more of us might focus on reality, marching, contributing, and striking for climate justice, economic justice, a safer and healthier world. I thank Jeff Merkley for remaining our senator. I thank Hillary Clinton for not running again. I want to hear more about the hearings, Ocasio-Cortez taking names while Cohen says don't expect Donnie to go gentle into that good night. In these last 2 years, I've seen more things I never thought could happen, so I'm not ruling out anything. So far, no grown-ups have shown up in D.C. to bring order to the classroom, so how can I trust anyone will when things so blatant are revealed or begun? No one could ignore the stink, the abuse. All the more reason to keep on pushing, keep lighting fires, keep spreading the word and comforting the setbacks. And no, I will not be running for president. For Poetic Justice, this is Dan Raphael.
The Rose Quarter Freeway expansion has a public comment period coming up for anyone in the community who wants to weigh in. We are joined today by Aaron Brown of No More Freeways PDX to discuss the expansion. Aaron, thanks for coming in.
Good afternoon. Thank you for having me.
So let's start at the beginning. Tell us a little bit about how this came about and what the proposed expansion actually involves.
Sure. So this is a $500 million freeway expansion that would widen I-5 through the Rose Quarter between I-84 and the 405 bridge, the Fremont Bridge. This project would expand 1.8 miles a lane in each direction, and it would be widening the freeway into the backyard of Harriet Tubman Middle School in North Portland that just reopened to students in the fall of 2018. And we are the community group that is actively opposing this project. We have a coalition with about a couple dozen community advocate organizations, neighborhood associations, the Harriet Tubman PTSA, environmentalists, climate hawks, and we're all coming together to say that, you know, we have 11 years to solve climate change, and a $500 million investment in fossil fuel infrastructure is a really terrible way to spend our public money. We need to be investing in transit instead. So we've been putting together this community collaborative approach to really get as many comments as we can on the public record in opposition to this project.
Aaron, what is the case against the project?
So our case really centers on the three big ones of fossil fuel infrastructure. We mentioned climate, again, 11 years to solve climate change. This is an intergenerational investment. If we're going to be spending $500 million on any one transportation infrastructure in Portland, it needs to be MAX. It needs to be bus lines. It needs to be public. It needs to have crosswalks in East Portland, right? We could build a lot of safe routes to school. Like, the entire city's safe routes to school program is $250 million to build sidewalks and crosswalks for every school in the entire city of Portland. This project is twice that, right? There's the air quality issue. So already students at Harriet Tubman have been encouraged to not have outdoor recess, according to Portland State University's air quality research. Yeah, it's bad. So this freeway expansion, moving it even farther into the backyard, the census tract here has, I believe it's the third worst air quality in the state of Oregon. So expanding a freeway into the backyard has all sorts of environmental justice issues. I believe it's around 70% of students in the Tubman community are identified as a marginalized community and disadvantaged through, I forget what the official terminology is, but, you know, it's an environmental justice community. It's a frontline community, and we need to be standing up for those students, right? And there's also the thing that, you know, I fully understand there's probably many listeners right now sitting in a traffic jam. Traffic sucks. This project won't fix it, right? I know a lot of folks out there think, oh, if we only just had a couple more lanes. But if we had a couple more lanes, you would probably drive a little bit more, and so would all of your neighbors. We fundamentally have proven over decades there isn't a single city anywhere in North America that has solved traffic congestion by adding more lanes. There's a freeway industrial complex that certainly likes taking hundreds of millions of dollars of government contracts to build more and more infrastructure. But at the end of the day, it's not going to make traffic any better. It just means that you and more of your neighbors are all going to be stuck in the same damn traffic jam waiting to get forward. So, and we have numbers to prove all of this. We have all of the data that we have accumulated from decades of this research across the country. The Oregon Department of Transportation, in their environmental assessment, has provided all of some numbers, but they haven't actually allowed us to double check their work. So there's an enormous issue of public engagement right now in which the environmental assessment is missing numerous data sets and quantitative appendices that we could go through and double check their work. Because ODOT is claiming that this freeway somehow will improve air quality, reduce carbon emissions, and reduce congestion. And that's a unicorn of a freeway expansion, if we've ever heard of one. That is something that freeways just have not done anywhere in North America. So our rabble-rousing group of citizens are really looking through, and community members are going through the numbers and trying to piece together how ODOT did their math. Like, it's a middle school math test where, like, you have to show your work, right? With long division, you can't just say that you got the number right, you have to prove it. And we're having that moment right now through the next month of really trying to come up with, how certain are we that this project is? And ODOT as an agency is notorious for fibbing and cooking the books on some of this stuff.
So, speaking of kind of public input, I'm curious, as you're out and about in the community, kind of stumping for this issue and talking to people, what are you hearing? What are people's thoughts? What are their concerns? Is anyone even informed that this is about to happen?
You know, we've had a bunch of different community events. This has been an entirely community-led thing. You know, over the last year and a half, we've probably spent no more than $2,000 to $3,000 on buttons and stickers and sponsored Facebook ads, just trying to get folks to pay attention to us, compared to the tens of thousands of dollars that ODOT as an agency has had for all of their communications to make these fancy videos that kind of like gloss over the impacts to Tubman and stuff. But when people see, we made a video of our own showing what this freeway expansion does to the backyard of Tubman. And when people saw it, they were shocked, right? Like, a lot of folks that thought this was just some Portland liberal hippie, whatever, like when they saw the video, they went, oh, this is really an intrusion on this frontline community. And when you look at the numbers and see just how deeply ODOT has misled the public on this stuff, like, there's a meaningful necessity for us, especially for those of us that are interested in having a decarbonized economy in the next 10 years. Like, we need to be rapidly retiring the fossil fuel infrastructure. And when you look at it from that context of what is necessary for us, you know, the freeway industrial complex is something we have to be retiring right now. And this project is Portland's opportunity to stand in line with those values.
Is there a process for public input right now that KBOO listeners should know about?
There is, and thank you for asking. So if you go to our website, www.nomorefreewayspdx.com, there's a big button there that says public comment. If you click there, it goes through many of the talking points I've just mentioned and just kind of explains the issue a little bit more. Public comment will be taken all the way up until 5 p.m. on April 1st. There's also an event happening on March 12th. That is this upcoming Tuesday at the Oregon Convention Center. And we're going to be showing up with a lot of Harriet Tubman students in particular to go talk about air quality and really make sure that the community's voices are heard, because we want to be empowering the folks that are most likely to be harmed by this project to be able to speak truth to power and speak specifically to ODOT representatives about the intrusion that this represents to their community.
And this is a bit of a gimme question, but I'm curious who's coming out in strong support of this project aside from ODOT.
What's interesting is there's a lot of people that, you know, publicly, the funding for this project came from House Bill 2017, the bipartisan transportation package that was passed 2 years ago. And so there's a lot of organizations that feel as though, you know, they helped pass that transportation package that had a handful of really good things in it and a handful of not so good things, including this freeway. And they feel as though, like, it would be inappropriate for them to come out in opposition to this project because they had worked in Salem to put this package together. So there's a handful of organizations that have been kind of like privately, you know, admitted like they're not sure it's a great thing, but they're not sure if they feel comfortable about it. Mayor Wheeler has been an outspoken supporter of it. Bless his heart. There's, you know, the Oregon Department of Transportation, the freight industry. They've made this whole compelling pitch about how this is necessary for all of our freight needs and all of our congestion and the folks that stand to get $500 million of government contracts, right? I mean, like, that's a lot of money, and these organizations are well-funded and they have bipartisan lobbyists. It's not unlike a prison industrial complex in that, you know, there's massive infrastructure that has bipartisan support that can provide union trade sector jobs. But at the end of the day, it's based on a 20th century understanding of our criminal justice system that actually, whether or not you think we need prisons tomorrow or 10 years down the road, we certainly don't need to be building more of them. We certainly need to be using the ones we have better, right? And all of the research shows, and this is actually one of our big cases on this freeway in particular, the traffic data that we've been able to get from ODOT shows that they aren't actually looking at congestion pricing and tolling. Tolling has a whole other regional or regressivity and equity issues that we can talk about in a moment. But what's really worth noting is that for this $500 million project, this piece of policy that is likely to be implemented in the next 2 years that will have drastic impacts on how much traffic goes in that corridor is not being studied because they're afraid if they included it, it would make this project unnecessary. So that is pretty wild that ODOT is essentially saying, okay, we need to buy a $500 sink and we're not even going to call the plumber beforehand to see if he can fix it first, right?
And what are your plans for the March 12th hearing on the freeway expansion in particular?
We're going to bring environmentalists, public health specialists, doctors, and community members that are really concerned about this, and in particular, a lot of middle school students. So we will have a lot of frontline communities there to just speak their truths about the necessity of speaking out on fossil fuel infrastructure.
Okay, great. Aaron, could you give us that website one more time?
I absolutely can. www.nomorefreewayspdx.com. We're on Facebook and Twitter, too.
Thank you so much for being with us today. That was Aaron Brown of No More Freeways PDX speaking about the proposed Rose Quarter Freeway Widening Project.
To the KBOO News Evening News for Wednesday, March 6, 2019. This is a volunteer-produced newscast, and we encourage your participation. Call us with your breaking news stories and tips at 503-231-8032. Our production team for tonight's cast is Yasmin Kobanoglu, Emily Gresham-Beamer, Lisa Loving, Jason Sinano, and Dan Raphael. The producer is Yasmin Kovanoglu, and our engineer is Liam Delta. The interim director of Evening News and Public Affairs is Lisa Loving. A podcast and transcript of this newscast is available on our website at kboo.fm/eveningnews. You are listening to KBOO Portland on 90.7 FM. K282BH Philomath on 104.3 FM. And K220HR Hood River on 91.9 FM. I'm Emily Gresham Beamer.
And I'm Erin J. Bernard. Coming up tomorrow morning on KBOO at 7, it's Democracy Now! With Amy Goodman and Juan Gonzalez. At 8, Voices from the Edge is off this week. Instead, we will be airing Final Straw Radio, a weekly anarchist and anti-authoritarian radio show, bringing you voices and ideas from struggle around the world. At 9, Press Watch with host Teresa Mitchell brings you all the news you're not supposed to know. At 9:30, it's Fight the Empire with host Per Fagering. At 10, The Heather McCoy Show welcomes best-selling author Johan Hari to discuss his new book, Lost Connections, uncovering the real causes of depression and the unexpected solutions. At 11, Between the Covers interviews author Marlon James about his latest book, Black Leopard, Red Wolf. Then at 11:30, it's Black Book Talk with Patricia Welch, Emma Ford, and Obi Hill. All of this KBOO programming is made possible by members' support. To become a member, go to kboo.fm and click on Donate.
Good evening. You are listening to News from the Boo. I am your host, Mike Crenshaw. And once again, bringing you news from in and around the KBOO community. And I am here in the halls of Benson High School at Alliance at Benson, and I've got a very special guest today. Tripp, how's it going, Tripp?
It's been, going pretty good, actually.
What grade are you in?
I'm a senior in high school.
Senior in high school?